You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
X marks the spot for a 15th consecutive year. The Penguins are going back to the playoffs. Not that we were surprised. Some accomplishment. Longest current run in the NHL. And with that, we welcome you into the 66-87 podcast here on DK Pittsburgh Sports Radio. I am joined by Taylor Haas, who was in Washington. Watched the 5-4 overtime win, and also Dave Molinari back in Pittsburgh. We've got a lot to get to. We will have Stephen Wino from the Associated Press, the lead hockey writer for the Associated Press, is going to talk to us a little bit about the Capitals, some other league issues. So a lot to get into. Taylor, you were at the game tonight. A wild one, a wild ending. What's your headline coming out of this game?
Yeah, I mean, other than, you know, clinching the playoff spot, but, you know, just focusing on the game alone, just I think the resilience, like you said, the wild ending where, Wilson ties it up with 14.3 seconds left, and then for them to regroup, they did, and then pull it out in overtime. That, but then also, they were playing a man down, losing Evan Rodriguez midway through the first and most of the game. So just the way the forwards stepped up, especially, you know, some of the bottom six guys, that was good to see. So yeah, just the resilience they showed in this win.
Kasperi Kapanen with a couple of goals. Freddie Hockey gets back in the lineup. He has a goal. Aston Reese, which a huge goal, obviously the winning goal, is obviously the biggest goal of the game by Jake Guentzel, but Aston Reese with a big goal at the end of the second that really kind of sparked them going into the third period. And just a crazy, as you said, a kind of a crazy ending. Dave, what sticks out to you when you watched it? I know you had some cable issues, but for what you were able to see, what stuck out to you?
Well, beyond the obvious result and its implications, I was really struck by the fact that the Capitals scored three goals as a direct result of winning faceoffs in the Pittsburgh end. I think that's something that has to be at least a bit of a cause for concern for the Penguin coaches. You know, perhaps that was an aberration, but that's the kind of thing that you can't have happen on a regular basis.
Yeah, and you know, I really appreciate the work of the analyst community, but one thing I am an issue with, a lot of them will say that faceoffs are not that big of a deal when they all kind of even out in the long run. I disagree, and we saw that evidence tonight, as you mentioned, several goals off faceoffs.
Just to touch on the defensive zone was the only zone in which they won more faceoffs than they lost. So I think anyone remembers the losses that led to goals, but I mean that right. It's not that they weren't even bad specifically in the defensive zone and faceoffs. It's just that everyone remembers those goals.
Yeah, exactly, and they're killers, and that many tonight. The other killer was and Chris Letang has certainly had a better second half of this season, but you hope he got that hiccup out of the way at the end of the game. That, you know, you watch so many of these end of game situations, and Dave, I can't remember how many times I've seen a guy that wide open in front of the net to tie the game. Wilson's tying the game, and it just looked like Letang made a bad read there, went behind and stayed behind the net.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you don't want to leave a guy unchecked in front of your net. with 15 seconds to go in a one-goal game. But Letang could have rendered the whole thing moot about a minute earlier had his shot just gone about a quarter of an inch farther to the left.
My wife's screaming at the TV. She thought it was in at first.
Well, it couldn't have come much closer to being in, which would have put the Penguins up by two. And as I say, rendered everything that followed moot.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you have to wonder, you know, in a race that's so tight, you know, will the point that the Capitals managed to salvage on that Tom Wilson goal end up being the difference in the standings, whether, you know, whether it's for first place or seeding or whatever. That was a tough one to give up. Obviously the Penguins have to be happy with the final result, but you know, the point they gave away could turn out to be costly.
I want to ask you guys both opinion on this, because when you see 5-4 score, your natural reaction is to think, well, it's a rough night for goaltender. Taylor, I thought Tristan Jarry made some key saves to kind of keep it a one-goal game at stretches, and I thought he made a huge save at the end, right before the Penguins come down and win it.
Yeah, I mean, he was really locked in for most of the game. I mean, some of those were weird bounces. The one that comes to mind, I think, was the Orlov goal, the one that just kind of popped up over him. Kind of a weird bounce and then trickled in. But, I mean, he was solid for a lot of the game. I don't think he had a bad game at all.
Dave, that save right before they go back down and win it, those are the kind you right away when you – I thought he was going to get beat on that shot. He made a great stop, and then they end up winning.
Yeah, he did. And, you know, that's the kind of game-changing save that they're going to need in the postseason. Maybe not necessarily so much in the final five regular season games, because, you know, now that they're in, that's the big thing. You know, getting the best possible seed is nice, but, you know, the major hurdle has been cleared. But when you get into the playoffs, you're going to need your guy to come up with some game-changing stops. And, you know, that certainly was one.
Not all good news tonight. First of all, you know, let's go with the injury front. And, Taylor, let's unfortunately for the Penguins start with a new add to the list. Boy, Evan Rodriguez, that hurt me watching it, and I was 600 miles away.
Yeah, I mean, you saw his reaction. He got hit by a Mike Matheson shot in the slot on the power play midway through the first period. It looked like it hit him either. It was hard to tell from the replay, but somewhere in the left ankle area. It looked like maybe behind it or to the side of it, like on the boot. But, yeah, you saw his reaction when he went down. He was in a lot of pain. I was surprised. So he went to the room. He came back a couple of minutes later and did, you know, a couple of tests, you know, warm up like laps during a stoppage. And then he stayed on the bench. But then he came a couple of minutes after that. He, you know, tried coming out for a shift and immediately, I mean, he didn't make it a few feet off the bench. Immediately he turned around and like waved to the bench and then got right back off and went down the tunnel on his own. He ran down the tunnel. So he didn't need help getting off that time, but yeah, it was definitely a scary looking injury.
Let's stay with the injury front for 1 minute. You were there today. It sounds like Evgeny Malkin is very close. Would it surprise to see you? Would you be surprised to see him Saturday?
No, I wouldn't. I mean, just from watching the optional skate on before that game, I didn't think he was going to play just because he stayed out very late with like the taxi squad, healthy scratch guys. But from watching him, he didn't seem to be missing a step. But yes, so he was, you know, full contact. Goudreau obviously came back, so yeah, just kind of waiting on him. Tanev and I guess Rodriguez, but yeah, just, I mean, what, Goudreau comes back in and then they lose Rodriguez, so can't catch a break.
Dave, any thoughts to one of the things that, and thankfully nobody was hurt in any of these collisions, but boy, Garrett Hathaway seemed to be targeting, he had a couple of runs at Crosby, and the one Sid just barely got out of the way. I don't know if the TV was good there. Did you any sense of that, or if you're the Penguins, is that something you kind of file away? They've got some big boys on that team. Dylan, the defenseman Wilson, we don't even need to describe him. And Hathaway is another one of those guys that just seems like to run around a little bit.
Well, yeah, and I mean, they have to do something to try to counteract the Penguins' obvious advantage in speed. You know, and you, they can try to do that with physicality. I would fully expect if those teams meet in the playoffs, that you will see them try to hit key guys like Crosby and Letang, you know, at every opportunity. Even if you don't affect the guy with a particular hit, you try to wear him down over the course of a seven-game series. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think there was anything surprising about that, and I don't think anybody should expect it to stop.
Very good. All right, we will be back here in our second segment. We've got a lot to talk about. I want to talk a little bit about Mike Lang's great night the other night at the arena. So please stay with us here on DK Pittsburgh Sports Radio.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for the Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Welcome back to segment two of the 66 to 87 podcast here on DK Pittsburgh Sports Radio. We will have a little bit later Stephen Wino from the Associated Press, who is their main hockey writer, joining us, and we'll ask him some questions. Obviously, the second game against the Bruins did not go the way Penguins fans had hoped, or the team. But the one really nice thing about that game the other night was the return of Mike Lang, a legendary broadcaster who's, you know, missed most of this season. Well, all but the game the other day, just because of coronavirus concerns and some of his own unrelated medical procedure that he's had done. And just just to see the acknowledgement from the crowd, from the players themselves, for this legendary broadcaster was wonderful enough. But then, Dave, you had a story that night about a little something that kind of tied it all together with the star of the team, Sidney Crosby. For those who did not get a chance to read your story, and I encourage you to do on DK Pittsburgh Sports, tell the readers what happened.
Well, it was after the game, and Mike Lang and his analyst on the radio broadcast, Phil Bork, were leaving the press box. They were probably about halfway between the broadcast booth and the elevators when Emma Kilmer from the Penguins communication staff walked up to them and handed Mike Lang a puck and an envelope and said to him, "This is from Sid." It was, you know, the puck's pretty self-evident. Precisely what was in the envelope, I can't tell you. It was either a card or a note. But anyway, the point was that Crosby wanted to let Mike Lang know that he and his teammates were aware of Lang's presence in the building that night, and you know, I guess in general, just to acknowledge the importance that he has to this team and the way he's respected by the players. I think Lang is probably without question the most dominant figure in this franchise in terms of people who weren't directly involved with the on-ice product. He w- his work was largely responsible for keeping the flickering hockey interest in this town in the late 70s and early 80s burning. It's a couple of years ago they renamed the press box at PPG Paints Arena after him, and I think that's the least that they could do to acknowledge and honor the impact that he's had on this franchise.
Taylor, one of the things about Sidney Crosby, other than he's one of the best players in the world, has been since he's come into the league, is he seems to get it. He seems to understand what's the environment around him. Any surprise at all that he would reach out to a legend like Mike Lang like that?
No, you see him show that kind of appreciation for, I guess, like the support staff or people in roles like Lang has before. I mean, you just look back to what the other game when the equipment manager, gave him the stick on the fly. He immediately handed the stick after he scored the goal back to the equipment manager, like for him to keep. So just nice gestures like that. He's always aware of that kind of stuff, and he really has a lot of appreciation for the people like that.
And it's not limited to, people involved with the hockey team. You hear so many stories after the fact of visits to hospitals to see kids and stuff like that. I mean, he's a world-class hockey player, obviously, but he's an elite caliber human being too. People who are around him, I don't know that you're going to find anyone to utter a bad syllable about him. He's just a good person.
Yeah, and I think that's what kind of made this story so kind of poignant, because you're kind of describing, as you said, probably the face of the franchise off the ice for many dark years with Mike Lang, and then obviously the greatest player that's played for this team in the last 10, 12 years, ever since Mario hung him up, to acknowledge the greatness, recognizing greatness is a pretty cool story. And Lang, we don't know exactly what the future holds, but his legacy is secure no matter what he does. One of the great, great announcers, play-by-play man, I don't care what sport. I loved listening to him on the radio growing up in Warren, Ohio. Are on TV on KBL. Boy, I'm dating myself there. But Dave, it's not to belabor this, but the thing that besides just such a wonderful call, and of course he had the great goal calls. Everyone knows all the different sayings. But I don't know if I've ever seen a broadcaster that had a better sense of the game, of what was coming, who could foreshadow what was coming in the game. You just knew the Penguins were on the verge of scoring, or they were in trouble. Could you not just listening to him?
Yeah, I mean, that absolutely is the case. And it's not like he's a guy who grew up steeped in hockey either. He's from around Sacramento, California, which was certainly not a hockey hotbed when he was a young man. But he does really have a great feel for the game. I'm sure part of that is, was developed over the years from watching so many games, beginning in the Western Hockey League, I believe is where he got his start, when that was a minor league operation as opposed to the junior league by that name now. But no, he has an exceptional feel for the game, as good or better than I think a lot of guys who are paid to be analysts.
Yeah, 100% on that. We could talk about this. I could talk about this all day, but let's do move on. Taylor, well, obviously it's been a good season for a lot of players in this team. Jason Zucker is a guy, let's face it, I don't think anyone expected him to be this deep into the season and have sitting on 13 points, at least going into Thursday night's play. I don't think anyone thinks he's dogging it. I think he works hard. What has gone wrong this season as far as not being able to put up points?
I mean, as of late, since the trade deadline, he is playing on his off wing. So at least since, they acquired Carter, I mean, that is part of it, is that he's not playing on the side he's supposed to. Doesn't really set him up for success. But beyond that, I mean, I don't know. And it's not that he hasn't had, you know, chances. He's had chances before, and maybe he gets denied or something that stands out. What it was when they were in Buffalo, and, you know, he had a 2-on-1 with Carter, and then, like, he passed it, and it's when he should have shot. So he is, like, passing up opportunities too. But I mean, it's hard to say what exactly hasn't worked this season for him.
Dave, you've been around elite hockey players for many years, decades even. I don't care how good you are. If your confidence starts to wane, if you stop seeing the puck go in the net or your name occasionally pop up on the score sheet, I do wonder if some of this is just mental, because, again, I see the effort. It's not like he's not working. Your thoughts on why a player of this ilk is sitting on so few points?
Well, first of all, thank you for cutting it off at decades instead of centuries. I honestly think you nailed it there with confidence. I don't know that people appreciate just how significant that is for even the most accomplished players. If you start to have even a modicum of doubt about what you're capable of, it really can have an impact on your play. And there is no question that Jason Zucker is capable of contributing more offensively than he has this season. He's not a game breaker or possibly even a difference maker, but he is a legitimate top six winger in this league, and certainly can reasonably be expected to put up more points than he has. And, you know, I would not rule out that happening if he can regain his belief in himself, you know, during the what's left of the regular season and then into the playoffs. And that could be a big plus for the Penguins. You know, if they get all of their forwards healthy and get him producing at the level that's reasonable to expect, that could be a big deal.
Yeah, and when we're talking about confidence, as quickly as it can go, you get one or two goals, get something, puck in off someone in this rear end, something, finishing a 2-on-1. That sometimes is just, you just need that little spark, to that little belief. And you're right. You're absolutely right. Going into the playoffs, you get a guy like that, just being able to pitch in offensively a little bit, then all of a sudden that just gives you one more element of offense that you just haven't had for most of this season. Okay. We're getting toward the end of the regular season. We got a little bit more than a week or so to go here, depending on what division you follow. And you guys, obviously, both you, Taylor and Dave, you've got some decisions to make as far as voting for the end of the season awards. And I'm wondering, first of all, before we get into some Penguins specifically, how difficult is this going to be for you guys as you make your selections this year, in a year where you're really only seeing 7 or 8 teams on a consistent basis, because you both cover the team, and maybe not seeing as much of the league as you normally would? Taylor?
Yeah, well, I'm lucky I don't have a vote this year. The Hockey Writers Association really trimmed it down this year because of that, because we aren't seeing really any of these other teams. So it's only if the certain number per market. I'm lucky I don't have to decide, because, like you said, it is really difficult. I mean, looking around the league, like, you can probably say, like, Kaprizov is going to win Rookie of the Year, but beyond that, it's really tough, because we aren't seeing some of these teams, like you said.
Dave, I'm sure a Hall of Famer like yourself takes pride in trying to put out your best possible votes, but I would have to assume, again, I'm assuming you're relying on a little help from your friends around the league to inform you on some of these picks.
Well, the problem with that is that they're in the same situation. Yeah. That we are, you know, as Taylor mentioned, the voting list is cut down this year. There will be 20 representatives from each of the four divisions, and then 20 at-large voters, many of whom are broadcasters. But almost everybody, you know, of those 100 voters, you know, are seeing firsthand, you know, games from one division.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's really difficult, you know, to compare players, what, you know, when you're not getting a firsthand look at them, a guy, you know, even, you know, once or twice as you normally would with someone from the other conference. I expect this to be really, you know, challenging. You'd like to think that whatever divisional bias there is this year will be balanced out because it will be the same in all four divisions. But, you know, it's there are things that would have upset me more than if the league had simply decided to suspend handing out these awards and trophies this season, because I think it's going to be very difficult to select the most deserving people.
Yeah, it seemed like that we saw that in baseball too. Not to get off topic, but I know in talking with some friends who cover baseball, those were hard selections to make last season. Again, luckily getting back to a little bit more normalcy there this season with baseball. But okay, if you guys had the thoughts on the different awards, is there a Penguin player or a coach that you think is either worthy or has a good chance of winning one of the more prestigious season-ending awards, Taylor?
I feel like whenever there's a season like this where they have a lot of injuries, you have to mention Mike Sullivan for the Jack Adams. Again, I'm not familiar with, I guess, some of the other teams and other divisions of you know, what cases their coaches might have. But I feel like Sullivan for the Jack Adams might be what the best shot they have at having a player or coach win an award.
Dave, first of all, I want you to dovetail off of Taylor there, but are you surprised at all that Sullivan has never even been a finalist given the amount of success he's had in his first couple years, or is it just one of those things where the league kind of have people, the voters, these are broadcasters, correct?
This is correct.
The broadcasters. That there's just sometimes there's like, oh, he coaches Malkin and Crosby, who couldn't win with that lineup. Your thoughts on him, A, never being a finalist, and B, is he worthy this year?
Well, I think there is some of that where people, you know, who aren't around the Penguins on a regular basis might look at their lineup and say, you know, how would you not win with the personnel that they have? Certainly that, you know, I could see people having that feeling early in his tenure, not so much now. I think he's if you had to pick somebody associated with the Penguins, I would think he has the best chance. You know, there are some other coaches who have done some really good work this season, Rod Brind'Amour in Carolina, Dean Evason in Minnesota, you know, Joel Quenneville,
yeah,
who's rather accomplished over the course of his career in Florida. So, I certainly would not say Sullivan is a lock or even a favorite, but I think he's a worthy contender for the Adams. The other two guys I expect to get votes. I think you'll see Letang get some support for the Norris Trophy, which goes to the league's best defenseman. But I think he's been much too up and down to be a major factor in that voting. And I think you'll see Crosby get support in for two trophies. I think he'll, you know, figure into the Hart voting, which goes to the player adjudged to be most valuable to his team. Although I think Connor McDavid is going to be a pretty, staggering favorite to win that one. And the race I'll really enjoy watching or seeing how it turns out is for the Selke Trophy.
Yeah.
I think there's kind of a bias against Crosby because people think of him as a point producer, but there seems to be a growing acknowledgement around the league that this guy is a pretty good 200-foot player who is quite effective in his own end. And I think there's growing support for him. I don't know that that will translate to him winning the Selkie, but I expect him to be somewhere in the mix at least.
Yeah, I think I would agree with both of you guys on your thoughts there. Again, I think if I had to pick a favorite right now in the Adams, Jack Adams, it might be Joel Quenneville. Everson certainly has done a really nice job there with Minnesota. They've already qualified for the playoffs. And I agree with you on Crosby. I think as he gets older, and maybe this is natural with a lot of great players. I know Ken Hitchcock always talks about guys as they get older in their career, they have to adjust their game a little bit. The game, you're constantly kind of reinventing yourself. And not that Sidney Crosby ever had to change anything he was doing as a player, but he has become more of that 200-foot player. I think Steve Yzerman was that way too. As his career went on, he became a really good two-way forward. But we'll be finding out that pretty soon, but we'll be finding out a little quicker is the thoughts and opinions of Stephen Wino from the Associated Press. He will be joining us next here on the 66 to 87 podcast. Welcome back to the 66 to 87 podcast here on DK Pittsburgh Sports Radio. And as promised, we are now delighted to be joined by Stephen Wino, the lead hockey writer for the Associated Press, based in Washington. And we really appreciate his time. This is a crazy time for anyone that has an appreciation for people that work at the AP. They're being tugged in nine different directions. Stephen's following the NHL and also working on the NFL draft. So his time is precious. Stephen, how are you doing today?
I'm doing very well. How are you guys doing?
Great. Thanks for taking some time. Interested, obviously you are based there in Washington. You watched last season as a Caps team that has been very good for several years here, winning the Cup in 18. Knocked out in the first round. Off-season changes made. Peter Laviolette in. Zdeno Chara out. Braden Holtby out. As we get ready for another playoff run for these guys, what are your impressions of this team and how different are they and what would you expect from them in the playoffs?
It feels more like every year from 2012 to 2018 than it does the previous 2 years, because you know now, especially probably with Barry Trotz and now with Peter Laviolette, that the coach isn't going to be a problem. Todd Reirden, as an assistant coach, is a really good assistant coach. It didn't work out as a head coach in Washington. And I think you could certainly trace that Carolina loss in the first round to Todd Reirden's coaching, being outcoached by Rod Brind'Amour, certainly. But I think the biggest question and uncertainty about this team is how far the goaltending is going to carry the Capitals. And having Ilya Samsonov, who was supposed to be the guy, and Vitek Vanacek, a rookie who might wind up being the guy instead, or some combination of the two, is the uncertainty. And when I say it reminds me a lot of those years, they could lose in the first round or they could win the Stanley Cup, and neither one would be surprising. And I think that's the thing that the Capitals have almost come to peace with over the years, and it's even more sharp this year in terms of the focus on the division of any of these teams. Any of these four teams, I think, could come out of the East Division, and the Capitals could easily stub their toe and have the goalies lay an egg in the first round and be out in five or six games, and could make a long run if you get one of those guys to catch fire, because this is a talented team. Even with Alex Ovechkin right now dealing with a lower body injury and out, which is rarely happens, there's plenty of firepower when he gets healthy on this team to go far if the goaltending isn't dreadful.
Yeah. We talk about it all the time on this show of how competitive this East Division is. Penguins could easily get out, or they could get knocked out right away. It's just you we're not quite sure what's going on. Stephen, again, we mentioned at the top, you do cover the league for the Associated Press. And in looking around the NHL this year, you know, is there a story? Is there a story? What has been the best story, whether it be a team, a player, an event, or maybe just getting through the pandemic, at least to this far, where we're still pretty much on schedule?
Yeah, I think from a big picture perspective, the fact that the protocols have worked basically everywhere but Vancouver since the first 2 months of the season is you need to give a round of applause to the league, Bill Daly, and the Players Association for figuring that out. But when I started thinking about a best story, and it's one maybe we haven't talked about enough outside of kind of local markets, because it does feel like there's four different leagues playing at the same time right now, and not like it's one big picture league. But the Carolina Hurricanes are almost the best team in hockey, and Rod Brind'Amour should be in the running for the Jack Adams as coach of the year. They've gotten a goalie in Alex Nedeljkovic, who no one's ever heard of really before this year, to play well. Peter Mrazek's played well. James Reimer's played well enough. That is a team that it's not a sexy market, but that's a Hurricanes team that is fun to watch. It was the kind of the fun team a couple years ago when the storm surge happened. But the Carolina Hurricanes are fun, and maybe they don't get through the playoffs. Maybe Tampa Bay is just too good again, getting Nikita Kucherov back, and they probably are. It's fun though to see a team in a market like Raleigh have this kind of success again, and with the question of Rod Brind'Amour is a free agent and may not even be coaching there next year. But it's a good story when you've got a Sebastian Aho, when you've got kind of the young talent they have there in Carolina, and Don Waddell going out and getting a Vincent Trocheck last year, that this is an enjoyable team and a cool, fun story.
Steven, you mentioned the pandemic and coronavirus and how the league has in general done a pretty good job of, you know, conducting a season in the midst of all of this. However, the regular season was supposed to end on May 8th. And now, at least for some of the teams in the North Division, which is the one based in Canada, there will be games going as late as the 18th of May. Do you have any sense of how that extension of the schedule is going to affect the playoffs? There could be teams in the in the East Division, for example, that sit for the better part of 2 weeks before the regular season is finished in the North.
No, I actually think they're going to start. I think they're going to stagger the playoffs. And I was talking to a colleague about this afternoon, that every game in the Central plays its last game on Monday, May 10th. The East plays its last game on Tuesday, May 11th. You could literally start the Central on Friday the 14th, the East on Saturday the 15th, the West on Sunday the 16th, and get the North going on Monday the 17th. We don't know where the North playoff games are going to be. That remains probably the biggest question yet. But I do think that if there's a delay of sorts, it's going to be fixed by some series are just going to end early. You're going to have four or five game series here and there. And you can, as we saw in the bubble last summer, you can condense schedules together. You can play back-to-backs in the playoffs to get it through. And the NHL would love to get to that July 9th mark that was set earlier on as the final game of the Stanley Cup final of July 9th. It's going to take probably squeezing the playoffs a little bit, and it might take putting two of the Canadian series in the U.S. Our colleague Scott Burnside speculated today, a Jets-Oilers series somewhere like Glendale, Arizona. A Canadiens Maple Leaf series somewhere like Nashville or Dallas or Chicago, where you don't have to travel. You can play games on consecutive days and get through those series quickly. The NHL has gotten really creative and showed it in the bubble of getting through playoffs without kind of wasting time. And I think that's what we're going to see this spring, and that maybe you see the East get to game three or four, the Central get to game three or four before the North gets underway. But a lot of questions there with where the North's going to end up playing its playoff games.
And while we're picking on our friends to the North for destroying civilization as we know it, there hasn't been a team from Canada win a cup since Montreal in 1993. Since then, there have been teams from Southern California do it, from Texas, from Florida, North Carolina, even the District of Columbia. Any cheap and easy explanation, as you see it, for why Canadian teams can't win a cup?
No, I think it's simple math in that there have been more teams in the United States since then. And you saw the Quebec Nordiques and the Winnipeg Jets move from Canada to the U.S. before the Thrashers moved to Winnipeg. That it was a higher percentage of teams for a lot of years in Canada versus the United States. And you had the dominance of those franchises, particularly the Canadians, winning championships. The Leafs, as we all know, haven't won since 1967. But there were teams out there that could win. And look, the Canucks got close in 2011. No one's gotten closer than that. The Canucks got close in 1994, even a year after the Canadians won. So it's possible. But you also have the salary cap in there since 2005-06 that is kind of even the playing field to where you don't have to worry if you're a kind of a small market team in a Carolina, in an Anaheim, those kind of places, about being outspent the way some of the original six and big market teams used to do. You would see that the Red Wings have a payroll that's four times what the Atlanta Thrashers were paying players at one point. You don't have that disparity anymore. So it really has gotten more like the NFL in that it doesn't really matter a market size because of the salary cap and what Gary Bettman loves to call competitive balance, that it's kind of been unlucky, but this would be, you could say, the most likely scenario for a Canadian team getting through, because you guarantee with this playoff format that a Canadian team is going to be in the Final Four. You know that it's going to be three U.S. teams and one Canadian team. And I'm sure everyone's figuring it's going to be the Maple Leafs, but you look at the Winnipeg Jets or the Edmonton Oilers and say, if they get there, they have a chance to win, sure.
Steven, what are your impressions of the NHL's new TV deals and what this really means for the league?
I think it's good for everybody but NBC, and long term it's going to be good for the players and the kind of the 50-50 revenue split, and the cap's eventually going to go up. What it says to me most of all is the NHL is getting double the money, Taylor, that it was getting from the US deal with NBC, so that at the very least owners are going to recoup the losses from the pandemic. It's not necessarily going to make the cap go up in the next couple of years, but everything that the owners have lost in the last year or so is going to be made up by the Seattle expansion and the TV deals. For fans, it should mean more hockey at your fingertips. And there is a little bit over recent years of you have to seek out hockey sometimes, whether it's on NBC streaming or NHL Network or NHL TV. There's going to be more places to find games. And it may mean signing up for another three or four streaming platforms, like we all have a Hulu, a Netflix, a Disney Plus, and all that, given that ESPN Plus is going to have games. HBO Max is going to have games. You have the usual center ice package on cable. But in a cord-cutting world, it's going to be easier to find hockey in the United States. And with more promotion on Turner Sports, on TNT and TBS, and on ESPN, the thing that the NHL has talked about for years of growing the game, it's going to get that exposure back. You're going to have the people who have ESPN on in the background all the time, or the bars that have ESPN on just naturally. There's going to be more hockey on and visible in the United States than there has been in a long time.
Well, I, for one, will miss the NHL first round playoff games of like Columbus and somebody on Bravo. I know that. I will miss this network.
The Golf Channel games.
The Golf Channel game. It was, the first round of the playoffs was always comical if you're, the poor Carolina Hurricanes. And I agree with you that they're such a good team. And they would be just like, where is, I don't even know what this network is. And again, nothing against NBC, because I thought they did a really good job. Steven, you did a really good job. Thank you so much for joining us. A lot of knowledge, a lot of different topics, a lot of ground covered. Enjoy the draft. I hope you get a chance to watch a little bit of the Penguins and Capitals on Saturday. That will do it for us here on the 66-87 podcast. For Steven Wino, our guest, Taylor Haas, almost did it again, and Dave Molinari, this is Tom Reed. We'll talk to you next week.